Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Now your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Leslie Beavers, the Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer for the Department of Defense. Leslie, thanks so much for taking the time to join me.
Jason, I appreciate it. Thank you.
There's so much going on across DOD, so I'm going to get started right at the beginning. Let's talk about your top priorities. We have zero trust and digital transformation. We have policy updates like around reciprocity. So much going on. I'll just leave it to you. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the CIO world. And of course, cybersecurity is always going to be front and center. We're facing a whole of government threat, really a whole of society threat. So that is going to be a big push. And we're really happy with the progress that we've made on that. But we're not taking our foot off the gas. Also, we're user experience and how we are providing services for the warfighter is front and center in my mind. And that you see coming to fruition through the Joint Warfighting Cloud contract and the onboarding of our new user experience lead, Savan Kong. And then software modernization is a piece of that. And then finally, there's the workforce and actually managing and growing and developing the cyber and the IT workforce so that we are going to be prepared for the new innovations that are coming our direction, like 5G, those types of things. So that's kind of the big three in my mind is the security, the user experience, and then taking care of the people, the workforce part.
We'll hit all three of those, but let me go back to cyber since it's front and center and zero trust. What does zero trust, that path look like from an OSD perspective for the services as they continue to implement the capabilities over the next several years?
The zero trust is really a journey more than a destination, the way I kind of think about it. We're trying to get everything to work together. So not 91 separate tools, but how do we set up an integrated solution of products that work together to improve our ability to see what's on the network, monitor what's on the network, and protect in depth, not just at the perimeter. And so we still, as a department, remain very committed to the compliance by fiscal year 27. I think we're in a good place to make that. The devil's in the details, you know, as those plans come in that you mentioned, we're having to then work through what is the definition? What is the actual, what do we actually mean? How do we make it work together? So it is a large cooperation problem for the department. We have to get the services and the agencies to have similar, like if you're leveraging a centralized solution, where does that end? Is it at the boundary? Is it at the user within the agency? So there are a lot of, and how are you doing identity in the cloud and managing that from cloud to cloud? So it's a learning process as well for us. And I think Randy's just been leading a tremendous effort. I'm looking forward to visiting him out in Germany, where they're working with some commercial partners on securing some of our defense industrial base type areas. So there's a lot going on, but we do really appreciate and really rely on the partnership with industry, with our industrial base, with our cloud service providers, with our security providers. It's absolutely critical. So if you're in that group out there listening, thank you very much.
The one thing that obviously comes up when you talk about cloud and cloud security is the balance that you have to strike between the benefits of cloud and the security that comes with it and pushing it to the tactical edge. When you talk about zero trust, when you talk about cyber more broadly, that focus of, okay, how do we ensure the data, the systems at the edge for the warfighters are really as secure as possible? How are you starting to look at that from the seat you sit in? How are you working with the services and the agencies to really drive some of those concepts and some of those priorities?
So that's that larger customer / user experience and why that is so important to me personally, as well as to the rest of the CIO. And when I think and I talk to folks in the department about where we should be putting our effort here, I always lead off with, it's got to be functional first. If it's so secure that we can't connect, we're going to go around it, and that's not good. So it's got to be functional first. We have to be able to scale it. That's the other big challenge that we have in the department. And we have to scale it not just internally, but we have to be able to scale to international allies and partners and to the commercial world, this security. So that's the second thing. And then on the third piece is then we have to be secure. And in this case, it's with the zero trust, it's tagging the people, tagging the data, and doing the audit so that we know what's happening and you can identify intrusions. It's not if, it's when. We're under threat, we're under attack. Anyone who thinks that it will never happen is, I think, has a very thick rose-colored glasses on. And I hope they are right, but I don't want to plan for that. So yeah, that's... it is, and that there's a natural tension between the user experience and the security. And I think there's also a lot of good opportunity with the implementation of Zero Trust in the cloud to modernize technology, and between the AI and the big data and analytics that we can do, the physical separation requirements that existed in the past for security, I think we can start to break down those barriers and make things interoperable and secure at the same time. But it is a big lift.
You mentioned user experience. You mentioned customer experience as another priority area. Obviously, it fits right into the zero trust piece, right? If people don't find it easy to use, or at least not if it overly burdensome to figure out ways around it. I think you mentioned earlier this year that DoD is standing up a user experience portfolio management office. Where are we with that effort? How are you moving forward? What's it going to look like over the next year or so?
Yeah, so Savan Kong is on board now, and he is going to be shaping that. And so I'm really excited to see where he takes it. And we're looking at it from a holistic perspective, because user experience is more than just having, you know, the latest equipment. It is all around the functionality. And in the department, it's different than in the commercial world, because if you think of like an F-35, it's a flying interoperable networked computer with the pilot. And so the user experience is from the warfighter's perspective, whether you're sitting in an ops room or behind an admin desk or out in a plane or on a ship, does your IT, does your communications equipment work together seamlessly and stay secure? So the department is also standing up a big effort to get after the IT for the warfighter. And I'm thinking of it from the perspective of how do we connect what we have together better? Where can we invest in the department to make our equipment and our IT and our comms more interoperable? We've got an enormous installed base, right? Decades, millions, if not billions of dollars have been spent on this equipment. And it was designed in an era that wasn't organically networked. So it wasn't designed that way. And we've got to retrofit and bring that along. We can't afford to replace everything. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to make some improvements to the user experience if we take a concerted effort to look at where are policies standing in the way for the interoperability, where do we need an engineering solution, and where do we need just a process change or replace? Because the department is really pretty good at buying big things over long periods of time. Buying quick things and bringing them on, we can do when there's an imperative like a war, but it's not ingrained as part of the standard operating procedure in the department as much as we would like. So we're working on building that piece out to help bring in the new technology to also improve the customer experience. But then the other piece is we also need to offboard, or we need to retire old systems and legacy systems. And it's much easier to kind of just keep things going. I mean, we have an old house. Sometimes you do have to get around to replacing the plumbing or replacing the wiring. Those are big, heavy lifts. We do have some old IT that we need to figure out how to retire. But of course, it's been kind of Frankenstein together over the decades. And so there are a lot of dependencies. So those are the areas where I'm trying to get us to start measuring, start looking at a little more closely, and start planning the onboarding and planning the offboarding of IT and putting in place that governance process to kind of look at it holistically. So we're making a lot of great progress there. The deputy is leading the strategic management plan for the department, and she's a big proponent of metrics and dashboards, and we're all in on that. And it is very helpful keeping us aligned on our goals.
I want to maybe take a half a step back. You talk about this idea of bringing IT comms better for the warfighter. What's that going to look like? Is this part of this new user experience portfolio management office? Is this kind of a sub, not office per se, but a sub work working group? Walk me through what that's going to look like over the next year.
We're working on that, but let me give you my answer to that question. The pivot toward the pacing challenge has driven a massive refocus within the department on how we do things. And so you're seeing it, coming out with the operational imperatives from the Air Force, with the National Defense Strategy. A tiny little office in CIO cannot do this for the entire CIO enterprise. And we don't have purview over everything, right? The services own theirs. But what we can do is put in place the ecosystem, put in place the governance, the drivers to get decisions made a little bit differently. I'm trying to work all the way down into the decision making of the individual program managers and how they prioritize and make decisions, and help lead the way for the department to synchronize and simplify what we do across the board. And I think what we're going to end up doing is going down. I have a Lean Six Sigma business process improvement background, so we'll go down into the weeds on one small problem and learn from that, and then bring that back up to the department to help set the right policies, because there's always second and third order effects from policies and guidance that you didn't intend. And so we are actually, the CIO, I've been so impressed with this organization, how good it is at learning. And the CMC is a good example of that, which we can move to in a minute. But I do want to highlight the effort that has happened in 23 around the user experiences. We knew we needed to get after this, was with the North Chicago VA Medical Center. And that staff was integrated, I think it was about 15 years ago. It's in that time frame. I can't remember the exact year. But you have VA people and DoD people working on an East Campus and a West Campus. Those two were combined. And so you have VA people working for DoD people, working for VA people all across, providing the health for our veterans, and also the new recruits for the Navy go through there. And they were on two totally separate IT systems. So two, and they still are on two totally separate networks. So they didn't have a coordinated gal that they could look each other up in. They couldn't share documents easily. You had to have two accounts, and you'd email yourself stuff as the workaround. And it was, in some cases, it would take like 36 mouse clicks to send an email between the DoD. We measured it, sadly, between the DoD and the VA. But we've spent the last 6 months pivoting to Office 365 in the cloud, and turning on some B2B functionality. And this really was a cooperation problem where the security folks on both sides had to decide to configure the clouds the same way to enable that interoperability. And we are rolling that out now to the people working. So in less than 6 months, I threw down the gauntlet. I was like, okay, can we make this a Christmas present? So the team is there onboarding, training folks now, and so they have a shared gal when they utilize this chat, print. So that's a big learning, because it's got applicability when we talk about sharing with our allies and partners and how we configure our business systems to be more interoperable with them. It's got impact into the education realm, because how do you set up a .edu to be more interoperable with our .mils? So there's opportunity to learn from this exercise and kind of figure out how are we going to actually do cloud-to-cloud security and make it work and trust it. So that's the, like I said, on that zero trust journey, the devil's in the details. So you've got to go down into the weeds to learn and then bring that back up.
Leslie, on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. My guest today is Leslie Beavers, the Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer for the Defense Department. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Leslie Beavers, the Principal Deputy CIO for the Defense Department.
The VA and DoD example is a great one. Is that in some ways a pilot, and that's maybe not the best word, a proof of concept to say, okay, here's a really big problem. Let's jump in and fix it, and then take that and say, okay, how can we apply what we've learned from that to other areas? The VA DoD issue is maybe not the warfighter issue that you kind of mentioned. I think of warfighter as somebody more on the tactical edge, someone in the field, but the problems are probably very similar no matter what. Where, you know, lack of interoperability, systems that don't talk. Is that kind of the thinking behind trying it out here?
Absolutely. So that's what has set up for 24, looking at that interoperability and how to connect what we have together better. So that exercise, this is what I mean by I'm trying to get down into the individual program managers, like get down into the Department of Defense and how we think and how we look for ways to simplify. It's easy to try and reduce risk by adding more layers of bureaucracy and more checks and more balances and more decisions, but that slows us down. So taking a step back and looking at something from the user's perspective, in this case, is it a warfighter that is on the edge in the battlefield, or is it a warfighter just trying to come in and join us in the Navy and trying to onboard? And it's the providers that are taking care of them. So look at it from, that's a very lean approach, right, to thinking. And if we can have a few big examples that work well, the department is good at following the leader and when you figure things out. And so there's the CDAO is doing a lot of good work with this type of experimentation and then feedback loop and learning from that. So the CMMC is an example of what CIO has done, right? Because that came out in 2020, CMMC1. We got a lot of feedback, so we paused it, went back to, you know, took in that feedback, reworked it, and now we're very hopeful at the CIO level and policy level, that learning cycle is sometimes a very long one and maybe not as immediately apparent as that. So we're trying to reduce that cycle time, make it faster.
You bring up CMMC. Let's talk a little bit about the more broadly the defense industrial base. I know that CMMC is still going through a big process. It's not finalized by any means. But what have you seen over the last couple of years, just because you've been talking about this, focus on it? There's a lot of people who are excited, I'll use that in quotes, about CMMC. But I think just by driving the discussion, hopefully you've seen and the Defense Department has seen a defense industrial base change in the way they're protecting systems and data. Give me just some overall thoughts about the changes over the last couple of years.
I've seen a big change, and thank you for that. Yeah, to be clear, the CMMC rulemaking process is underway. It's by no means final and do have public comments coming up. So looking forward to that. The original goal was really around safeguarding information, and it's just kind of to standardize how we get after the NIST 800, 171, and 172 requirements, which are already in contracts, but then how do you evaluate it? I think that has driven a lot of awareness into the various companies that we work with in the defense industrial base. And we've seen an uptick a little bit in their use of a couple of fabulous and free services that the department provides. One is from NSA, the Cyber Collaboration Center, and they routinely share cybersecurity insights and expertise. And if you've got a contract with the government, you can sign up with them to get free services such as protective DNS services. And to date, I think they've blocked, what did they tell me? It was like over 10 billion malicious websites, domains have been blocked. And then we've got, I think around, we're getting close to 1,000 companies enrolled in that. And I think we've got, you know, we could potentially double that. So that's a great resource for your small and medium businesses to help improve their cybersecurity and their awareness. We also have the Defense Cyber Crime Center, the DC3 folks, and they do some no-cost forensics and malware analysis and a lot of technical exchanges. So getting dialed in with the federal government, CISA, as well as the NSA and the DC3 folks from a cyber perspective is really important for our defense industrial base. Now, beyond that, it's really important for companies within the United States. Our entire ecosystem, our commercial ecosystem is under threat. And we are in the department looking at ways that we could potentially help companies outside of the industrial base. We haven't gotten there yet, but I go out and I talk to industry leaders pretty regularly, and I am very pleased that nobody seems surprised anymore when I bring up cybersecurity and the threat and how important it is.
Leslie, I know we're just about out of time. Before I let you go, I think it's important that we touch upon one thing. As we look into 2024 and beyond, as the DoD CIO continues down multiple paths to really improve, change, update, modernize, transform, you pick the adjective. What do you hope both industry and the warfighters and civilians, service members and civilians really take away from what the efforts your office is focused on and what you're trying to accomplish?
I hope they take away firm understanding of the importance of interoperability, cooperation in this space. We as a whole of society have to be able to have a whole of society response. We have to partner. This is a giant cooperation problem across the board. That's why in the 5G space, the open architecture is so important. Interoperability, building things in a way that they are modular and plug and play. We live that in the commercial world. When I go home, we need to also live that within the Defense Department and be secure. So it is a big lift, but I think we've got a lot of really smart people working this. We've got a lot of really motivated partners in the commercial world. And there is more than enough work to be done for everyone. So I'm just encouraging cooperation across the board.
All right, very nice. I know there's much more we could talk about, but I know we're out of time for today. So let me thank my guest. Leslie Beavers is the Principal Deputy Chief Information Officer for the Defense Department. Leslie, thanks so much for taking the time to join me.
Jason, I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you and have a wonderful day.
We have to take a break, and when we return, we'll shift gears to learn about how the Defense Information Systems Agency is applying artificial intelligence to help answer employee questions. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. For this next segment, we talk to the Defense Information Systems Agency about artificial intelligence.
My guest is Steve Wallace, the Director of Emerging Technology and Chief Technology Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Steve, always a pleasure to catch up.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jason.
You mentioned a few really interesting projects that are ongoing. I'm going to start with one that's maybe in the sooner horizon, which is something you guys are calling a concierge AI. Maybe talk a little bit about what it is, how it works, what some thoughts behind it.
Sure. The idea with concierge AI is, how do we augment our staff, leveraging large language models, that sort of thing, and bring the sheer amount of data that we have, whether it be unstructured documents, structured documents, that type of thing, and deliver that to the user in a user-friendly sort of manner where, you know, almost like a chatbot. You're seeing that in many different places, but how do we make that specific around the dismission sometimes focused on the back office features, but then also with an eye on how do we do DCO and help an analyst better do their job to dissect an attack and what have we seen before based on, you know, after action reports, that type of thing.
The idea behind it is to take data that you already own, put it in through a large language model, and then put it in a secure environment. Got to be clear about that. And then give folks access to that through tools like a chatbot or some sort of other tool. That's like the stage one, if you will.
Correct. So how do we make it as frictionless on the user as possible? They're already in their, you know, respective chat client. How do we simply make it as though they're chatting with another person in a completely natural language sort of way and give them natural language back that boils down whatever they're asking for and gives them the best answer?
Is the challenge with using or setting this up where to store the data? It's clear where you have to store it, in some sort of on-premise DISA. I know you don't call them DISA decks anymore, but DISA data centers of sorts or DISA clouds. But has that really been the challenge? Okay, how do we take the tools and the data and put them in a place where people can access them?
It's really been the models themselves. So the storage of the data you can keep, whether it's on-prem or in a GovCloud environment or what have you, that one's reasonably easy to deal with. It's actually where the models live. And we've seen some implementations where the queries are passed back through to the model that sits in the commercial land. And the vendors tell us that those queries are ultimately dropped and forgotten about. To be frank, though, you know, in order to gain a level of comfort with our security folks as well as our users, it's best for us to have those models in a GovCloud type of environment. So that's what we're finally seeing some of that start to happen, whether that be the commercial models themselves or some of the open source models. We've seen an absolute explosion in the last year with respect to some of the very small models that are out there that are portable, that are, you know, you can even see some of it happening even out in the mobile world. New phone was just announced last week, where a lot of the AI and models are running at the edge in the device. And so we're really excited, you know, of what that brings to the table for us and our ability to run things, you know, in that IL4, IL5 type of environment.
You mentioned that this is something that's close to the horizon, potentially something this spring. You've done some prototyping. Is there any big lessons you've learned in the short term? I mean, I imagine you've tested this out maybe with a small number of people or in a small type of, hey, we'll use it for this small instance internally, just see what it looks like. What's the lessons you've learned so far?
Some of the lessons we've learned is really around how do we secure these environments. The concept of these vector databases is generally new. How do we secure them? How do we make sure that we're doing the right thing by the data that we're ultimately storing? I'd say that's probably the biggest lesson learned. I think we're going to learn a lot as well as we start to ingest a large document set, which we haven't necessarily done yet in the lab. It's been, you know, very small drips and drabs. I've been encouraged by what I've seen just with the limited amount of what we have been able to do. I'd say in the first half of this calendar year, we expect to have something out to the DISA workforce to start experimenting with. And from there, then we'll gather, you know, information about the user experience, that sort of thing, and then potentially, you know, make it go more wide scale.
Not sure you can answer this, but we'll throw it out there. Do you have a plan? We're going to start with 100 people, 50 people, and then build up and go to 500 to 1,000 to everybody. Is there any sort of plan you can talk to?
So I think we're still trying to figure some of that out, because we certainly don't want to release it to the masses, even within the agency, just our population of 12,000-ish on day one. We want to scale that and walk that out. I don't think we've figured out what is that release schedule yet, but it is something that's weighing on our minds.
More to catch up with you on that, I'm sure. The other piece of AI you mentioned, the use of AI, is around cybersecurity and used for the defensive cybersecurity operations analysts. What are you starting to look out there? Very similar to this concierge or something different?
Some of the technology is similar, and it's, we're seeing some things happen on the commercial side. We're seeing a number of the large vendors get into the building large language models around the security side of things. Microsoft has their Security Copilot. Google has their SecPom model that they have in the background that they're integrating into their suites. You know, a number of the other vendors as well have models that they are integrating in. So we're seeing that occur. Our ultimate goal and the challenge that we have is we are not a singular IT stack of one given vendor, right? So how do we take this when we have multiple SIMs that live out there and multiple data pools? How do we start to bring that together and federate across and then have these models begin to federate across? That's probably one of the biggest challenges in front of us is just that, you know, an IT infrastructure that's grown up over time.
when it comes to cybersecurity, a lot of folks are obviously very excited about how to apply AI, look at the data, understand the data better. Is that part of what you hope these models can do for you? Or are there specific goals you have to say, if we want to solve this problem by using AI or this set of problems?
There's a few in there. So sitting with our analysts and watching what our analysts go through in order to model an attack and decompose an attack and understand exactly what happened, any way that we can augment them by taking the data sets and feeding them into some sort of model to provide some sort of output so that they can have a one-stop shop, if you will, to understand the dynamics of things that we're seeing. That one's probably the biggest one that's out there in front of us.
When we talk about cyber, I talk about the future of quantum-resistant cryptography. I know you mentioned that as another area you're looking at. You mentioned we're less excited, less involved with quantum computing, but more excited about, okay, how can we deal with quantum-resistant cryptography? What are some of those early thoughts around it? What are you looking at?
So to be clear, the geek side of Steve Wallace is very interested in where quantum computing goes. The possibilities are enormous, and it is spectacular and mind-bending to try to understand the way that some of these things work. So there's certainly an interest. We're still trying to figure out how does that apply to DISA's specific mission. But the building a overall IT infrastructure that is resistant to what quantum computers bring to the cryptography game is probably our main focus, all the way up from the network layer working its way straight up through the entire OSI stack. We're concerned and exploring how that actually impacts. And it's not as much about can the quantum computer break a particular algorithm. That'll probably come in time. But it's also about, as NIST works through their algorithms and publishing their algorithms, how does it actually impact the way that our IT infrastructures work. Things as simple as a VPN is set up, and the key exchange occurs. If these quantum keys add a lot of overhead into that exchange, does that slow down that experience? What happens associated with that? So we can understand and adapt and be ready for the time when those algorithms, become official and become real, that DISA is effectively postured to defend the department and implement these algorithms.
So it sounds to me like you're in a little bit in that discovery phase, understanding it, talking with NIST, watching what they do. Do you expect to do some sort of sandbox, prototyping, pilot? You call it so what's your discovery going to look like?
Sure. So we actually have an active prototype going on. We did an OTA last year, awarded an OTA. And so we're in the phase right now of doing some crypto discovery. The OTA has, I think, 8 different deliverables. We're approximately halfway through it right now. Kind of to your point, this is about an education for us and how we're equipping the workforce to actually understand how some of these things work and the differences and watching as all of this evolves.
A lot more to come on that as well. Let's shift over to one other topic you mentioned, which is this idea of the DIDL environment. It's always it's one of those acronyms you got to think about what it means, but it's when you don't have a lot of connectivity at the edge. I'll simplify it. But you said that's pushing farther left, farther right. It's getting smaller. What do you mean by that, and what's that mean for DISA more broadly?
There's been a lot of excitement around this space for quite a while. As I came into the department years ago, there was always the challenge of how do we service folks downrange? How do we service folks at the edge? And that comes with a lot of challenges. Applications are latency sensitive or packet loss or what have you. And there were only so many technologies within our belt in order to try to solve for those problems. But you see the emergence of these PLEO satellites, your Starlinks, your Kuipers, your whatever, a lot of these constellations going up. You've seen the effectiveness of these types of tools in real-world examples in Europe. But then further than that, we also see a number of companies jumping into the 5G from space game, where they, with a generic cellular device that all of us carry around in our pockets, we can then receive, 5G signals from satellites on orbit. It's still very early. There's only a handful of or two of those capabilities in orbit right now, but it's a pretty interesting space that we continue to see evolving, and just on and on. We're seeing that edge, that DDIL problem change and compress and become less of a factor than it was even just 5 years ago.
I was going to say that exact same thing. That was a big discussion point several years ago, over the last several years. What do we do? How do we get cloud services? How do we get applications, data to the edge? From a DISA perspective, what does this mean for you all? Because as a service delivery, as someone who's trying to work with Indo-Pacific or AFRICOM or whoever to ensure that they have the connectivity they need. That shrinkage, what does that mean for you in terms of how you can deliver your services? And I think you mentioned software as a service as well as part of this discussion.
Sure, and that's part of that evolution and the maturation of IT that we've seen, right? As we've moved away from popping CD into a CD drive, loading your version of Windows Exchange, Red Hat, what have you. As we've moved away from that to sort of that commoditization and normalization of IT and towards IaaS and SaaS and those types of things, they don't necessarily account for the challenges of a DDoL environment. And so luckily we are seeing the emergence of these other technologies to start to extend that network out further so that always-on connectivity. That was always the dream, is how do I have always-on connectivity so I am not only able to push data to the edge but also retrieve data from the edge, right? The telemetry of the soldier, sailor, airman, marine out there, guardian, how are we retrieving the telemetry of what's going on in their environment and pulling that back in and working with that data set.
Steve, last thing, and you've covered a lot of ground. What's left on your plate? What are some of those things that you still that we haven't talked about that you are looking to accomplish in 24 and beyond?
Our team is on the edge of rolling out our next generation of classified mobile devices. That should really take shape within the next couple of months. Obviously, we can't have a conversation without capabilities like 5G. We talked about the space, the DDoL side, but there's also the terrestrial side and how's the department leveraging 5G across the board and doing it in an effective manner where you don't have islands of 5G infrastructure running completely around the department. We're working with our friends in the DoD CIO's office, help push that out further and realize some of those benefits. Some of the other things that are hot within our team at the moment, we talked about quantum, but some of the capabilities of browse down between networks, zero trust. We were a few years ago, we talked a lot about the launch of our Thunderdome program that is now in operation, that is now in deployment. We're seeing some goodness from that, but at the same time, we can't take our foot off the gas because we now need to realize all the benefits that we previously talked about as we roll it out, and how do we push the ball forward further and get into things like data tagging and leveraging those tags to make good decisions about who has access to what, those types of things. So there's a number of places, also a lot of work around the ethics of AI and the ethical use of the algorithms and how does that mix to ensure that we're using them effectively. And then, obviously there's the security aspect of it too. So there are a ton of things happening at the agency right now. It's a really, it's an exciting time. It's a cool place to be. I like to say that I do firmly believe I have the best job within the agency. I love the folks that I work with, and the people that we ultimately serve. So thanks for having me.
Steve Wallace is the Director of Emerging Technology and Chief Technology Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Steve, always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We have to take a break. When we return, we shift gears again, and we hear from the Defense Health Agency. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. For this next segment, I played an excerpt of an AFSEA Bethesda Health IT panel I moderated recently, featuring Pat Flanders, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency.
First, I'm going to tell you a couple things you may know because it kind of leads into something you don't know. So when the agency was formed, the military treatment facilities from the Army, Navy, and Air Force were not part of the organization. And so we had to kind of create the conditions for that transition to happen. So that started with the network. So we took an Army network, a medical network, a Navy medical network, Air Force line network, and a TRICARE management activity network, combined them all together. That created the conditions for a new electronic health record system. Right? So prior to that, we had separate systems for inpatient care, separate systems for outpatient care. It was a distributed architecture. We are now done fielding the enterprise EHR. And now our new director has an initiative called Digital First, and it is all about user experience, right? So we have the out-of-the-box, essentially, EHR, and we've got a network to enable it. But how many health applications are there in the DoD that people can use on their personal cell phones? Zero. Up until now, the cybersecurity rules kind of prevented that. I mean, there's specific prohibitions on the use of SMS. That is all being relooked. And literally, as we, I'm speaking right now, General Crossland is leading an offsite where we are actually doing journey mapping of individual personas. There's like six personas: an elderly person, a single parent, dual military, and they're walking through different aspects of user experience. And this is going to culminate in creation of a mobile app that can be run on a personal cell phone, and we are going to own the technical baseline for that. We're going to control the user experience in a way that has not been done before. And it's also going to tie in business process reengineering so that that user experience can be either directed at TRICARE for the purchase care side of the house or to the direct care side of the house to the MTFs that we operate. So it's really important to the director. She has two one-star flag officers that are clinical folks that are running that. She has five pilot sites that she's identified for this, and a team of hand-picked providers that are going through and doing the journey mapping and the business process and process reengineering. She's taking the time to really make sure. She says she doesn't want to cheat. Right, so she's really taking the time to go do all these things before we talk about, okay, now are we going to let a contract for this? How's that going to work? Are we going to do it in-house? But for sure, the management's going to be in-house. So that, I think, is breaking news.
You mentioned five pilot sites. What's the timeline around this, and will these six personas be made public? Because you have a bunch of people from industry here who are saying, okay, maybe I have technology or services or something that could help you out. Give us some more details about the plan.
So we're not to that level yet, right? So they're going through the personas, and what's going to come out of this is actual requirements that we could do something with, whether that be let a contract to industry or pilot some things or do all the work in-house. And so that's kind of where we are. What will emerge from this is requirements and probably a cost estimate to determine, hey, how much can we do? How fast can we do? There are a couple parts of it that they've moved out on already. I want to say in October, PEO DHMS started implementing a product called Amwell. It's going to replace the virtual video capability in MHS Genesis right now. The clinicians weren't really happy with that, so it's replacing that. And there's some behavioral health things that are being implemented. One's called SilverCloud. It goes live this week, I think. Maybe it's next week.
That's all the time we have for today. You just heard an excerpt of an FCA Bethesda Health IT panel I moderated recently featuring Pat Flanders, the CIO of the Defense Health Agency. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.